to you all again. I hope you've had a wonderful week. It's been busy for us, and the last time we met, let's see, what did we do? We updated the schedule, we went through, you know, all the potential topics, and so laid out a bit of a schedule for today, and as we know, our meetings are packed and full of good discussion, so we'll just go ahead and jump in. So, to get started on the meeting today, first of all, adoption of the agenda.
One move.
Great. Any objections? Concerns? No. Okay, seeing none. Approval of the minutes.
Well, I'll also, do we not have to record that you were present?
That would be a good idea.
Yes, because then the next time you're in, so I'll
That's why we go through this process. So thank you. Okay. And then with that change, any other changes? All in favor? Okay. All right. Moving on to business arising from the minute. So we talked about housing, and we are going to come back to that later. So I see it's listed under business arising. But I think we're going to circle back to the housing discussion later because we have a few draft housing questions that we've gotten around at the staff level. So why don't we leave that for now and then just move into the staff recommendation. So this is the draft schedule. Feels a little bit backwards to talk about the schedule yet because we don't know how much progress we're making today. So I don't feel like we're quite ready to tackle that one. Can we circle back to the schedule after the meeting to see how successful we are today?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next up is the additional topics for consideration. So remember at the last end of the last meeting, we went had kind of a rapid fire round table and people threw out ideas that could be explored through this consultation process and the quality of life survey. And so these are all listed here with some staff comments. So, and just so everyone knows that last meeting, we also talked about how to involve the other committee members. So on Friday, we sent out a survey to all the committee members and also to all the members of the council with the quality of life survey questions with sort of the same process that we've all gone through. Should this question be asked again? Should it not be asked again? Any comments? Right. So every committee member is going to have a chance to fill that out, and you know, maybe next week we can take a look at what some of the responses were.
Just to clarify, that was the current questionnaire from the 2017.
The 2017.
Okay.
Yeah, so far, there's nothing to look at.
Right.
And you know, I'm really hoping that because we also asked if there's any questions, and I'm hoping that the committee members will think about the committees that they're on and, you know, what potential questions they might have to add. So, for example, the accessibility committee members. That's a totally different sense than I think I particularly bring to it, but, you know, they have a very unique focus, and so they might very well have a specific question. Welcome, Bruce.
Hi.
There's at least a half a chair now, man, to be honest. So hopefully they will respond. But let's walk through some of the discussion areas that we highlighted at the last meeting and just some of the recommendations. So the first one, the environmental development permit area. And so the recommendation was that, because it's on recreation. And then combining it, I think that was, you see what happened there. So it's labeled environmental development permit areas. Oh. No.
Right. Not clear to me.
Okay.
What's meaning here?
So, I got you. Okay, so it's what's not clear to me and us was, what in particular were we hoping to explore through the development permit area? So just looking for input here, right? What would be resident priorities for development? You know, so that's kind of the way we were thinking of phrasing it was development permit areas are a tool that local governments have. So you identify a specific area of town and you say, if anything's going to happen here, we need to pay particular attention to X because it's an important area, sensitive. So in order to put that sort of legislation together, I think we need to know what areas are most important for our residents and what some of those key factors are that a consultant or that someone should be looking for in the future when we consider something there. So that's where we need to know. Like, is this the type of question that is going to give us something useful, do you think?
I think it's very ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't lead me anywhere.
Okay.
So I think just about anybody will answer a question about environmental
mm-hmm.
issues as being the park, recreation areas, and natural areas
mm-hmm.
are important. So then where do they fall in importance? What could be used for development
mm-hmm.
or could anything that's labeled park? I don't know. I think it might give an obvious
mm-hmm.
response. I don't know.
Because the wording is not clear, and
yeah.
even environmental development permit areas, like.
Can I kind of go a little bit about here? So what? This is not the question that would ever go on the survey. This is our direction. So, yeah, this is really important. This is what we would send to the consultant.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a question mm-hmm. based on this, because we want to explore this, right? So in other words, the consultant might put together a question that looks like, please select three of the towns following natural assets in order of priority. And so there might be like streams, forests,
mm-hmm.
Riparian areas, urban natural, I don't know, like, I'm just making a bunch of stuff up. But the idea is that we give them this direction and then they put together a draft question. So if the question, we would never send this to
mm-hmm.
in the survey, make them
mm-hmm.
But I guess what the key point here is this, are we looking to explore what people's priorities are for protection? Or is there something else that you think we should be probing through this? Or do you think that?
Bringing up something that I was talking to my brother, who lives in Geneva, but owns the Wall Foundation. He came up with something where he said, is there a way of having, what are you afraid of? What is your fear mm-hmm. for? And it switches the whole thing around from,
I'm concerned about the survey not asking enough direct questions.
Yeah.
And in the worst case scenario, they're sending the planning jargon. Like, I'm a planner, I don't know what development permit areas means yet. And I've been doing this for years. But if someone asking, what is important to me about my neighborhood? I think I could identify three things really, really quickly. Might be very valuable information.
Okay.
So I'm just using that as an example of a more phrasing a question that's more directly aimed at how a person's living and what they appreciate.
Direct and relevant.
Yeah, okay. Direct and relevant, yeah. I'm wondering if we shouldn't go that way with the whole thing.
Okay.
Well, and even the balance, like, I've noticed some of the development, and I always think of the strip between Primrose here and First and Beach and First, so that strip of new development. And the lack of green is very cement to me. And so is there a way of asking, like, we want more balance between green and development, like, so that there's, there's, it creates, I don't know, and better or nicer, otherwise we're going to go towards,
okay,
that's a feel I have. So how do we ask that question, and is there a percentage? A certain percentage green and another percentage development or construction, is
sure.
that a question we ask?
Sure, that I noted, like, landscaping, natural retention, and new development.
I guess I just want to get this off my chest sooner rather than later. I think if I was a citizen coming to this first time, I'd want it to feel like it has something to do with what's happening now. And just since we met, I drove up Memorial and to the railway tracks, and they were covered in shattered glass, and there were two cars collided in front of the gas station. When are we going to do something about that terrible traffic problem right there? It's really bad. One of the kids is going to get hurt coming from the school. Sorry, I'm being excited. The other thing is, yesterday morning I got up and someone ran into the new traffic medians at the foot of Hemsworth and the Island Highway and took them out. So that's the second time that's happened. When are we going to do something about this? Like, get real serious about traffic. I'm just talking about the present. And the third thing is, I really don't think we want too many $70,000 robberies in Qualicum Beach with holes drilled through concrete block walls. What's going on? If I was a citizen, I'd say, how are you dealing with what's really happening around me? I don't know how we deal with it.
Okay, so I think
some really important things are happening around.
There's lots of important things,
yeah.
Not all of which are going to be answered in this.
That's right.
So, but just to, refocus a little bit, like the specific age or the specific transportation issue that they're a part of what we call the age-friendly transportation plan, and it is out for consultation. You know, we have a public meeting coming up at the end of the month.
November 15th.
Thank you.
Well, I think people need to know what don't we have control over. That's a really important thing, to educate people on what we don't have control over. So I know it's not being difficult.
Just we were just struggling
as Andrew was speaking, simply because after the last meeting we had that exact same discussion with Nathaniel.
Oh, did you?
About traffic and what were the places that are just waiting for an accident to happen, and now you tell us.
That's good wording. To find it map the places where an accident is ready to happen.
I mean, it ties into what we've already discussed, which is public safety.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just making it more visceral, you know.
Well, this public safety is kind of a motherhood.
It's a motherhood. Yeah, the tuning motherhood statement.
So we have to, you know, this is a questionnaire that's going out to ask the residents what they want, and it's not the plan.
Mm-hmm. It's not the plan.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's really important to keep in mind that this is what council's direction is going to be based on to a large extent.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be as specific as possible in terms of what are the concerns of people. And as Luke said, we've got a number of ongoing studies and plans that are being looked at that have derived from previous councils. And what I would like to know is more things like, do people think that we have to grow? And why do we have to grow?
Yeah.
And how should we grow? And, do we want to grow just residential? Or do we want to grow businesses, or what kind of businesses, sustainable businesses, light industry? So it's those kinds of things that sort of set the base for what's the direction of the town, and it's not it's specific to a certain extent, but it's more a general feel. And also, now that we've got these provincial mandates coming down about housing, that people need to know that, but also what's included in that, like how will that affect us, how will that affect our growth, things like infrastructure, all the things that the town, people in the town, are essentially paying for. So what is it that's important to you, and how should we tackle these things? And the idea of, does it all have to happen in Qualicum Beach, or can it happen in little, Bowser and Deep Bay and Fanny Bay and those, that kind of nodule development? So I would like to know what people think about that, about alternatives to we have to grow and it has to be here. And do you know what the consequences are?
For example, if you're over a certain limit, I think it's 15,000 for the RCMP service, then right now we pay 30 per 30.70, I think, and if you're a larger community, then you pay 90.10, so it changes a lot of things.
So we do need to look at what's happening right now, but also the underlying basis of these decisions that we're going to have to make. And I was at VIEA, Vancouver Island Economic Alliance. They had a conference last week, and almost everybody was, the island is going to explode, and how are we going to deal with it? Water, traffic, all those kinds of things. So how do people in the town think we should deal with them? Not a question of we don't have to deal with it. We will. But how are we going to do that in a meaningful way? So those are the kinds of questions that I would like to have in the questionnaire. How you present that, I'm not exactly sure.
So in a little bit later, we're going to dig into housing. And I think that's, you know, housing and development are kind of in tandem in the survey. So can we circle back? Because I think you're raising a good point about the higher level development question. And so maybe there's a way to get it, you know, make sure it's in the survey. So why don't we circle back when we get to the housing?
I just want to get back to the environmental preliminaries. Well, because I raised that topic, and I wanted to let you know why I raised it. One of the reasons was because in the council meeting on September 6th, that was one of the areas that council set out as one of the four to focus on in the quality of life survey. And I didn't know really what that meant and what the intention was there, whether the intention was to look at, since we already have some environmental planning permit areas in the OTP, whether we were looking at expanding those or expanding the conditions or the terms of those existing provisions. So, that's sort of why environmental deviates from I agree with what people said. I don't think we want to ask about environmental deviations.
Okay.
We want to ask about those issues and those, as you say, those things that are important to people. To identify areas or things that we need to protect that we're not already protecting.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I like how you worded that there. What aspects or what parts of the town need to be protected and are not already being protected? Because it's partly about perception, because people don't know what's protected and what's not, but what they've seen has changed. Right? And so that would be a really interesting question. And then that might be the way that we tackle these development permit areas, right? So maybe we can work on that. I think we need to move on because there's lots of other topics on the list today, but I've got a few good points out of this guy. One is development permit areas is that term is way too long. We should never say it again out loud. And so it's more about like what do we need to protect that's not being protected? So maybe we can find a way to get that.
Yeah, it's really vague, but there's a study out there, I don't know what it's called, but it suggests that towns under 12,000 have a well-being of people. So when you get over that, it goes downhill. And I wonder, if you ask these questions to people like what Petronella was raising, that Bowser and those communities up the road could easily, Qualicum could be a model for those places. They're blank canvases like Bowser's, little town center, but it could grow to be like Qualicum with tree canopy and some other things. But I wonder if people even realize that's part of what can be done to deal with the crowded island that it's becoming.
Or the fear of losing it.
Or the fear of losing it. That
is what you're mentioning.
So there are alternatives.
Okay. Let's move on.
That's a question. When we were talking about development permit areas, was that only environmental? Was that meant to be only environmental?
one, that was what was specifically flagged, you know, over the last few years, that it has needing some attention, right? Because there's some activities and development permit areas, environmental development permit areas that people were concerned about. And so, you know, that like it was a few years ago, the development permit area in the northwest of town, you know, where the 10 acres, and they cleared that spot in the middle, and it was, didn't violate the development permit areas, but everyone was super upset. So we said, why don't we park that? We'll bring it up again in the OCC review, you know, and ask about it in the quality literature. So that's where that came from. So we're just following through on that commitment to raise it again for discussion. So we will explore this question in kind of the way that we've been talking about it today and back at some point. So next one here, I believe it was Andrew that raised investments in new recreational infrastructure as a potential thing to explore. And we went over all the services mentioned. So that's, those are those quality of life survey questions that are not, you know, within the purview of the committee, but there is a section asking about where you'd like to see new investments in recreational infrastructure. So
even though we're not responsible for the rule,
correct.
So this, I'm just being a bit of a broken record here, but this really worries me that we're asking people about things when the ultimate answer is, well, we're not responsible for it. Like the traffic. I don't even know if we're responsible for the traffic on Memorial or whether that's the highways.
No, we are.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. So what are we responsible for? What are we not responsible for? Because we don't want a whole bunch of people getting upset in the survey and say, why don't you fix this? I mean, why don't we build a community in the airport?
Right.
We have no control over it.
Yeah.
Right? We need to tell people what we don't have any control over. Mm-hmm. I'm a broken record about this.
I know, but then does the municipality have, can they impact the RDU, for example, with changes? And if they can, then there is, even if it's an indirect influence, there is?
Yeah, and so that's why I do think it's relevant. Like, so we made the land available when the pool was first developed because our residents wanted the pool. Right. So we carved out the piece of the community park to make a pool.
But are you going to say that about the ALR because we need housing? I don't think so.
But that's different.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Point of reference.
That's not our responsibility.
The province is regulates farmland. We regulate land in the community park.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So we regulate the land, but we didn't provide the facilities.
No. And so similarly, like if someone said we need a 20 unit squash court or whatever, well, okay, if everyone wants it, we'd probably find some land, reach out to the community, what's the right response for that squash court. But okay,
that's a segue. I wasn't here last week because I was looking after toddlers, and I was amazed at what wonderful recreation we have for 0 to 6. And kids in school do very well, too. But what's still missing as part of my life in Qualicum is what's there for youth once you're a teenager. And the skate park's not cutting it. It's good, but that's not the extension of it. If I hark back that 10 or whatever years ago, some way that teens and young people could have a voice into the community that felt comfortable to them. They'd never come into a meeting like this, but two of them might. And so to think in terms of how to get that voice into the discussion, we'd probably build a different community in some ways.
And I want to second that. That's the thing I said the first day I was here. I'm really worried about who we're doing community plan for. It's for those people in high school. If they stay here, if they can stay here, if they want to stay here, what is in it for them? And how are they going to have input into this? We really have to think more like them than like others.
Which means you have to bring them in.
Somehow we need a mechanism to bring them in dramatically. That's my view.
Have we gone any further with the notion of engaging a school project?
Well, we are going there on Thursday. Yeah, on Thursday we're going to be in the leadership class. To get some input on the survey, also on the bus garage project, that's from the main one we're asking for their input on. So,
but I can say that having, you
you know, some youth, they're talking about youth, I'm talking about young adults, if they had 20, we're lacking a recreational center. I have a son who drives from 9 on a, almost daily basis to go to rec centers over there. It's lacking. And that could be added on to our school facility.
Yep.
You know, like a lot of them have that. So
okay.
I think there's also...
It's the mindset that says it's important, it's important, it's important everywhere. And to start with the mindset of youth is here and it matters.
And often then other adults will use it too. You know, it's not going to be only for the youth. Lots of people will probably end up.
Okay, can you make a note, you know, to try to tie youth into that question? And we'll keep working on that question.
Okay.
But I don't think it'll be in the section of the population.
Also, we have utilization issues. I mean, I've never understood what the gym at the Civic Center is actually used for, except sometimes
pickleball.
Well,
lots of pickleball.
It could be used all the time. Like, if we tile it that way, it could be used all the time.
Well, if anyone wants to have a side meeting about recreation specifically, that it's not really within the purview of the committee, but I'd be happy to talk. So if anyone's like super passionate, wants to come in, let's do that. But not now, if that's all right. Okay. Moving on, healthcare. This has been flagged many times. It's a priority for council in terms of, you know, addressing the healthcare issue. We have a doctor shortage. You know, there's many potential issues to explore, but we're having trouble, like, asking a question that's going to give meaningful information to council because, A, we don't fund healthcare, you know, so we're mostly advocates, and B, what would be useful to know from our residents that we don't already know? So, need your help.
Yeah. There's no point in asking that kind of question because it's on everybody's mind right now. If you've got a doctor, how long is he going to last? You don't have a doctor, what can I do?
Well, isn't it one of those issues, sorry, we have no control over it?
Yeah.
Well, so, just from an informational point of view, there are 8,000 people in Oceanside without doctors. Flowerstone Health Clinic, which is their nurse practitioners, there's 4,000 attached patients there.
Mm-hmm.
Flowerstone wants to grow that to 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so these attachments they get from VIHA, cover overhead, but it doesn't give the society any funds to expand or to hire a clinic manager, which is something they need now because so much going on there.
Mm-hmm.
So people feel that that's something that the town should get behind in a supportive way to help with something like a clinic manager. Or do people feel comfortable with nurse practitioners? The nurse practitioners have at least master's level training, and they're able to do most things a doctor can do. And so that's growing here.
That book should go directly to the council, I think.
Honestly, how do you mean?
The issue is not a planning issue.
Sorry,
no.
Well, I just, you've been patiently raising your hand.
You've segued to something I found out this morning, and it's something that we could have control over if we chose to do it, which is Wheels for Wellness. You can't get a ride to your doctor who's in Victoria or whatever. It's going out of business next year, and that's because the support they were getting from VIHA is gone. So the bigger thing is a lot of things are beginning to happen where the support that we've been getting a free ride because someone else is doing the support, it's really important for the healthcare thing to be able to get to those doctors that are far off. Anyway, just saying.
Okay, so why don't we go 1, 2.
So would there be any point in consulting with the group that meets at the train station?
The family physician?
Yeah. Would there be any value in asking them the question and size of our community and given the issues that we're facing?
That's a good suggestion. Okay, can you make a note that we should ask the Division of Family Practice for ideas for a question?
Well, I'm out of the box, so I'm afraid I'm going to tread on someone's toes. Does anyone know what the assets of the Parksville Cultural Foundation are? Does anyone know there is a Parksville Cultural Foundation?
Yes.
I believe their assets are $5 million.
$5 million.
Yeah? And, I mean, a 5% GIC rate, 5.4 today, right? That's $250,000 a year, and we can't afford someone to manage the health practice. Maybe we're not using some of the resources that are available in the community. When I was doing planning work for VIU, we had a donor in Bowser who had like $5 million. And no one would ask him for anything. Mm-hmm. So it made me really think, how many people are out there who really want an opportunity to get something? Maybe we just need to make the case in a persuasive way. I don't know. I'm out of the box.
I just want to make one quick comment, then Craig. Actually, you were waiting patiently. Go ahead.
It's 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
We're only on the second meeting here, and it's not relevant. It's relevant to our lives and the community, and not to the plant.
So the only thing I've heard that, the only thing I've heard that I think would make a really good question potentially is gauging the degree to which the town should get involved in something outside of its purview, which is healthcare. Like, do you want your tax dollars going to subsidize, you know, a provincial function? And that's a legitimate question, right? You know, because if we start subsidizing rental spaces or doctors or whatever that is, like, the money doesn't come from nowhere. So, if that's something that we do, or why don't we look at that? What that
that's an interesting question.
Yeah, it is. So, let's just go with that for now, and that leads to that. So, emergency preparedness came up last week. What specific aspect of emergency preparedness would you like to explore?
In preparing for this meeting, I was reading about Carmel. And one of the things that's in there is the idea that things get down to a neighborhood level, like we have Neighborhood Watch, that theoretically works. If emergency preparedness could be seen by the town as something that your neighborhood owns, it might have that visceral feeling of leading to engagement. Better than some, you know, higher levels.
So, like, gaining familiarity with the town's emergency preparedness?
We're seeing emergency preparedness is happening at a number of levels, including what's happening in your neighborhood.
Okay.
Great. Well, I think it's an issue, too. I live in Qualicum Woods, and we have vestiges of the Qualicum Woods all the way through the neighborhood, and these fires this year. Maybe really look at the trees around us, like, are we really ready for something like this? What would we do, you know, let alone Qualicum Woods itself?
Okay.
It's a big issue.
So, can you put that in the form of a question that's going to yield usable information for us?
Well, I think just asking a lot of people, do you think an emergency preparedness action committee would be a valuable asset to your community, to your local neighborhood?
But everyone's going to say yes.
Yeah, they're going to say yes.
The wrong question.
Yeah.
And everybody's going to have a different idea as to what that means to this person.
Maybe they should say yes. Then we would know.
The idea of it, does emergency preparedness operate at a number of levels? In a household level, we know, and we shake our day and stuff like that. But we don't talk much about the community level, you know. The 10 streets around them.
So maybe it's a question of exploring people's knowledge of the different scales, because the emergency program does have neighborhood scale stuff, but if you don't know, then we should know that, right? I mean, and the same thing, like, you know, to know about the regional collaboration. Like, so maybe it's a question about familiarity, because the programs exist, but if our residents don't know, that's a problem.
That's a terrific point. I think that's what I'm trying to get at. Okay. If people don't know how it works, then they don't know how to live here. That's the bottom line. So how much of this process that we're designing needs to be educational? Because it's not just what they tell us, it's what we're telling them.
Okay.
So I think it's a two-way reciprocal thing.
Okay.
Would be very valuable.
I like that. Okay, so that could be really, you're
I was gonna say, Andrew, I've been feeling that way about a number of these questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that really we have to leave people alone a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We ask things just sort of outright without giving a context sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the more that we can sort of describe
mm-hmm.
what the OCC does or how these things fit in, then we might be able to develop a questionnaire that engages people a bit more
mm-hmm.
and leads them through with a pretty reasonable kind of coherent way.
Okay.
First question under C, or the first issue, concerns with high-density housing, stated by a statement, which is excellent,
mm-hmm.
and then identify what you're concerned with.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But I think the other thing that is this survey is being sent to every household in town, so it's probably by the time someone finishes survey, they're going to know more about many things than they did start. So that was, we should keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jennifer.
The Carmel plant, which is happening now, starts with this sentence, which I thought was great. I wrote it down. Please take the time to better understand the challenges we face as a city and lend your thoughts and voices to help find the best solutions. I thought that was
great.
Mm-hmm. A good lead in.
Okay. If everyone's okay with that kind of direction on emergency preparedness and engaging awareness,
mm-hmm.
then we'll move on to the next one. And if you wake up in the middle of the night with a brilliant idea, just
call.
Call me.
He's got the phone by his bed.
Of course, yes. 1-800 OCD ideas.
I may help you.
Yeah. Okay, plan to action. Very important to town, very important to council. Trying to explore what exactly should we ask that's going to yield usable information for the town, for town.
Well, and I think part of it is whether it's a mm-hmm. question or it's aspects that flow
mm-hmm.
in other questions.
Yeah.
Right? So, things potentially going to come up in a number.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a huge question, because it's not just driving a car.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the fundamentals of our economy are creating problems. You know, consumerism, I think, where everything gets obsolete, thrown away, more things are manufactured in China, delivered over here. It just leaves me wondering how we can make something meaningful there.
Yeah. Go ahead, Janet.
Down the road near Dashwood is a place everyone should visit. It's called the Dog House. And it's built out of cob with wine bottles and all of that sort of thing. But Susan, who runs it, wonderful lady, said to me something that stuck. Oh, well, in 50 years, none of this will be around. And she was pointing to the forests around. The kind of trees that are there now won't be the kind of trees and all sorts of factors. So it said, my God, we're imagining something that will never change because we'll be good little doobies doing our bit. But nature's working too. And some of the things we assume, we can't assume. And where it would lead me to be saying, well, what kind of trees does the town plant? And what do you let people or encourage people to plant in their landscaping and so on? Are they the trees of, you know, the vegetation of a future world or what looks nice now?
Some of that is included in the tree protection bylaw and the urban forest management plan. So I think maybe, again, it's those are a work in progress as well right now, but I don't know how many people are aware that those things have. So it's, you know, what about things like the trees and tree protection bylaw? We've just had the single-use plastic has been then, essentially,
mm-hmm.
what about our water system? Because it is quite a huge question. So to ask a climate action question, that's really difficult, I think, to narrow it down. But are we looking for what's important to people. So we want to say, what's more important to you, water or trees? Well, they're both important. So I'm not sure how to
create that. Well, it's a huge issue, and I mean, I don't know that anyone's really got hold of it, but I was really shocked by an article in the New York Times about 3 weeks ago that the average person in North America today owns three times as many clothes as they did in 1989. So what are we doing? Like, surely the major, the core of the environmental argument is do with less. Does the town have any control over that? Can the town promote people doing this less? I guess the biggest way we can do that is with smaller buildings, smaller houses. These 2,800 square foot houses, I don't know what I'd do. I'd be lonely, you know. What aspects of the environmental issue do we want to get hold of? Do we want to say we're going to focus solely on solar heating and how buildings are oriented? We do a lot of good orientation work. But what don't we have to find a way to narrow it down something?
But I wonder, just hearing the last two comments, that, you know, what is the question that gauges resident support for some of the things that the town is working on, or which kind of options to advance, you know, climate action in one way? So, for example, you know, gauging people's support for tree protection, tree planting, you know, improving energy efficiency of buildings, getting people to walk and cycle more. Yeah, so we kind of have a list of, like, these are all the things that are good for climate action, both mitigation and adaptation. Pick your favorite tree, right? And that might give us an idea of where residents are, like, 100% behind it, and where they're not there. Maybe they need more public education, or maybe they don't get the answer.
Maybe you don't think there's a problem.
And then the other last option would be, screw you, tree givers.
I think it's interesting to just have a conversation, because just in this little conversation here, I don't think anyone mentioned water.
Mm-hmm.
But this was I got an $800 water bill for this last session. We have the plan. We thought we're not going to lose any shrubs. We made sure we didn't lose any shrubs. But 800 is like twice what it was last year.
Wow.
And
water, sewage,
everything. Yeah. But the lady down on the Third Road who was building the property, the extra house on her ALR land, she had a water main break, and she had a $3,000 water bill, which I think is being negotiated. But this water thing won't go away. This is an immediate biosphere shortage. And I don't know how Parksville is rationalizing what they're doing, but they've had a much more serious water problem for years than we have. But we have to get a hold of this one.
They're just ignoring it. By the way, I think it's constantly just ignoring.
Since bringing up that thing about water conservation that was taking place last week, that, you know, this is the first year where, you know, it's always been noticeable that Parksville has signed out very early in the year, and we never do. And I see a few people this year wonder why it is that Pelican does not do that. And so just the general concept of conserving water, you know, whether we do or not have a water source that is reliable or not, it may be a general idea that we should be doing it anyway.
And we have flagged that to go on the service question, because it definitely needs to happen now. There will be something in there. But I'd
like to know what people around the table think are the three big environmental issues, because I still don't, it's still very fuzzy to me. And there's a danger there of being so vague that no one really says anything useful. So, like, can we narrow down three or four serious environmental concerns?
How about sea level rise?
There, it's happening.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking that maybe there's going to be two questions, and try not to be too wonky and technical on the descriptions, but there's mitigation, like what are we doing to prevent further, you know, damage. Yeah. So that'd be things like trying to get people out of their cars and finding trees and preventing trees from being cut, you know, that list. But then there'd be potentially a second question about priorities for adapting to changing conditions. And that would be a really good time to ask things about, like, what are your priorities? Water conservation, adapting to sea level rise, you know, preventing forest fires. You know, there could be a second list there.
How about the elephant in the room, illuminating wood stoves? It's happening all over.
Air quality.
Air quality.
Air quality.
And I've got a wood stove, and I think, how much longer? You know?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So would that approach be something we could play with a little more? So, Kate, did you get that? Okay.
So can I just, so then we're looking at things like greenhouse gas emissions for, and what about building design, building step codes, and the easy things, which I've mentioned at several council meetings, but, you know, the color of roofs and plantings for shade trees and those kinds of things. So it's stuff that could easily be done. It doesn't have to be a big, huge thing. Like, people can deal with it on an individual basis as well. So that would be part of, some of that is the mitigation part, because I think recently we've been looking more at adaptation and sort of thinking, well, it's too late now, but it's not too late now. There are things that we can do.
Building design can be a part of both.
Well, it's so frustrating. I mean, someone's built a house at the end of Burn Road, that new house that's right on. And I, did anyone do a study there of where the sunlight comes from? No, it didn't. Big sheets of glass facing north. I mean, where are the architects? I'm sorry about that. But, like, the very first thing you think of is, how does the site behave? Where does the resources on the site come from? Where's the natural light? Where's the solar energy? It seems like no one's thinking about this, or very few people.
Okay, sorry. Thank you.
What about, like, also providing some information? Like, I mean, I don't even know, but let's say a dry skate. Did you know a dry skate saves so much on water use? And then would you consider that? Like, you know, in some of the questions, giving tangible information as opposed to, you know, what is important to you and what are you concerned about? Like, you know, like, come bringing it down. I know that on our street, we're almost one of the only ones that don't water our grass. Like, but, you know, maybe encouraging people, did you know how much you save for the water if you do this? Or, and then it comes back because we, you know, I mean, giving some.
So a question would be, what conservation practices do you, would you consider that?
That's a good one,
so
the water thing. So,
yeah,
I like that.
Yeah. So, dry skate, I gather that's rocks or concrete. The downside of that is it heats up during the day and releases at night.
Well, so, but, you know, what way there are, there's some grasses and stuff.
I can do that.
Yeah.
Good one.
That's
great.
Yeah. What's the term for that?
Zero skate.
So that people, if we're asking a question about it, so they recognize what the question means.
Okay. And one last?
Yeah, another big sleeper issue, which will go away, but I think people can control this packaging.
Okay, we're not going to talk about it.
So, just your room. I'm just saying it's a big environmental issue.
It is. No, it's just not the place. Yeah, look it up on me. Yeah. The next one is accessibility. So, this one, like I said, sent out survey feedback, so we're hoping to get an accessibility question. But if anyone here has an inspiration for something to explore with an accessibility question,
what I was going to say about this one was that the accessibility team was the advisory team, they did a survey this summer. So I don't know whether there's really a need for us to do a survey question. from that. I don't know what the results really were, but that
okay.
would be,
yeah,
they, be a lower priority than some of the others, the other topics we have.
Okay, it's related to public safety. Should be in the same package as public safety.
Okay.
And the year before Christopher the DC came around, all the communities then came to call him, so maybe it's, yeah, we don't have
maybe
to
do it. Maybe
we
don't
need a
question. Why don't we wait and see what we get from members of that committee? And then it must be something that's really timely and should go out to every resident in the town. Like I always think, this is our only shot to do something to every resident in the town.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be a pretty important question that we don't already kind of know the answer to. Or public education. So we'll leave that one to the side for now. Okay, make a note of that. This one, I don't remember who flagged this last week.
I think it might have been Andrew, the 15th. The
which one?
We have to do with RCMP and safety.
Yeah, coordinating efforts to create safe spaces with essential partners. So the RCMP, Parks for RDN, et cetera. So you need some more clarity. So it was in the notes and we weren't sure where that is. What exactly. This is the rapid fire at the end.
So what were safe places?
I don't quite understand.
Well, I mean, I live here, and it really bothered me that someone chopped down a concrete wall last week and broke into a store. What? The same way as next to the art gallery at the end here on the corner, there used to be 8 conical cedars to that building, and they were systematically burned down in the middle of the night. And there was no one here to do anything. No one did it. And I think, how long are we going to go on in this dreamland where bad things don't happen? Bad things do happen. And one day, something really bad is going to happen, whatever that is. So
first of all, it's like, put that in the term of question that everyone had resident answer.
I want to know if people feel safe in Qualicum Beach.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. And that might be a question that we track over time, right? Just like our feedback on people's quality of life.
Yeah.
So let's make a note of that and see if it fits into the overall survey that I heard.
Unless you have to add, and if not, why not?
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Yeah, so that might be really good because it totally relates to people's quality of life. So thanks for
We have an office right next door at Community Policing. I've been there since I moved here 18 years ago. I have no idea what they do. If I needed help, I wouldn't run in here. I want to stay on the corner somewhere. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay. Any other concepts for safety? Okay. But I like that. Thank you, Andrew. Last one, electric vehicle bike infrastructure. So this was flagged last week. And
you own an e-bike.
Okay. E-bike ownership. What else do we put to this question?
In Carmel.
Okay.
In Carmel, they're talking a lot about golf carts. And it might be something that's out there that we haven't quite seen yet. But it's a road vehicle.
Okay.
So they make the rules about what your golf cart has to look like. Just saying.
Okay. E-bike, golf carts.
We talked last time potentially about adding a question that looked at all of the personal vehicles that people use, all of the different types. So something like that might fit in there.
How many vehicles are in your household?
Right. And I think it was we were bringing that into the whole question of if we're talking public transportation, et cetera. If everybody has multiple vehicles, and then the electric version was subset that, is it almost says there's not going to be demand for those other services if there's 3 cars and whatever sitting in the driveway. Is that where we came from? I think so.
And we also talked about the fact that there's more bicycles, it seems, than a lot of electrical bicycles, and the lack of infrastructure, like to lock your bicycle or when you're going to town. So, and I think that is
okay.
What we're talking about is using a bike that can use a bunch of food.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing a higher level of quality food. Okay. And then also, there's, we mentioned last time, is a lot of people will just come down 2nd Avenue, and you're at risk of being hit by a driver or a door opening up. So it's, I look at it and I don't see a place for two lanes, but could you route people down Fern and say if you're going to be on 2nd Avenue, walk the bike?
Okay.
Another thing that I'm finding, I'm a big, big walker. I share paths with my cyclists. I think there has to be more signs of please yield to pedestrians. Because there's been a few times where I walk by a group of cyclists and some of them just literally, almost caught me. So I think it has to be important that there's respect between walkers and pedestrians. And I'm all for both.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I think Nathaniel's comment is important because who's responsible for educating people and ensuring that this happens? The other day I came out of one of the alleys and a little three-wheeled, I would say, vehicle for seniors came nipping down the road, so I stopped for that, and then it turned onto the sidewalk on Beach and was zooming up the sidewalk and there were pedestrians. So my question was, where does that vehicle belong? Because one minute it was on the street, the next one was on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I can tell you all about
that. Just sort of adding to that, because at a public open house, one of the questions raised was, what do we do about electric bikes, electric scooters, electric skateboards? I don't know if they have such a thing, but apparently they do. And those walking up scooters and the stand-up things, and they're all electrified. So to April's question, do they belong on the sidewalk? Do they belong on the road? So what people's opinion about that? What can be done to make it safe for everybody?
So I kind of heard two things. Like one is, you know, when we talk about maybe more latitude, was like what types of barriers are there to using these types of transportation? And then I'm hearing more today, what issues do we need to deal with in terms of getting them, all of them to coexist together, right? So
I suppose a question, just a draft idea. Do you feel e-bikes / scooters, et cetera, are a safety issue for pedestrians or you? Because they are. The street wheel, they come up behind you.
Well, you're supposed to have a bell on your bike.
They know. If you're riding on the roads, you'll never hear the bell. I knew it.
The less problem is that the bell and people have earphones in, or they don't hear very well.
Yeah. You can
yell. Yeah.
So anyway, are those two general focuses kind of what we're getting at? Like,
yeah.
Trying to eliminate barriers to using them, and also working and living together.
Quite
good. Different uses. Okay. So we'll try to find some questions to explore those. All right, now we're on to the Whopper.
Mm-hmm.
Housing. The Caplots. So between the last meeting and this one, we just, brainstormed some questions, right? And they may or may not be questions that you like, but, just to kind of stimulate some discussion, and maybe you've thought about questions since last week, and you have some ideas of specific areas to explore in residence. So why don't I'll just quickly go through the questions that we talked about, that we come up with, and then we'll give us some feedback and maybe talk about new questions that you have. So the first one was, just like recognizing this came up out of the provincial discussion, like recognizing that the province is definitely pushing municipalities to allow increased density. What would you be your concerns? Like, what are the issues we need to deal with as we go through this change process, which is in some ways inevitable. Change is happening, so what should you deal with? Trying to identify like the options.
So it seems to me that Quaker Beach is in high demand, that means prices are high.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you want to have people who serve us, who have the more expensive housing, we need to find a way that they can have an easier to use here, or a way of building housing for them. And you started off talking about Bowser and down the road there as part of the solution, lower density housing. That is affordable. So how do we get to that? Does it have to be in Quaker Beach?
Okay, so just making some notes. And we'll come back to new questions, but if something comes up, so it does. And that's how I kind of broach the survey.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a question there too. Cool.
All right. Yeah, I think we have to give, we have to understand what the province is requiring.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know that yet.
Yeah.
So it's a little premature perhaps to ask this question, because you're stating the province is requiring that municipalities make efficient use of land.
So if it says that the province may be requiring, and then the other is, where are the town is already doing this? Like, you know, there's old houses being torn down,
right,
and infill in neighborhoods. Like, so where are the concerns? Like, where are people's biggest concerns with that? Right? That's what our OCP says, is that over time, the area close to the uptown will be densified, right? The single-family houses will be replaced with the multifamily in a mix of format. So that's already happening. The province is vague, like we don't know exactly what it's going to do for quality D, so it's off in that language. But to me, the question is still good in terms of, like, I'm trying to understand, because the change is already happening.
It's not going to be affordable unless the government's involved, I don't think.
Okay.
Unless you're out beyond the boundaries here, you can have manufactured homes.
Then would you want to see a question engaging housing affordability, or
I think that's an important question. I think the affordability issue is different from the housing type issue.
Okay.
In last week's paper, the Parkville Council approved a housing development that partially or somewhat involved with a nonprofit called the Bolina Housing Society. So I have no idea financing on that, but there is something.
Okay.
I think there's an elephant in the room, and we're about to find out really quickly what it is. And I'm talking about the condominium building that's going across from the brew pub. The issue of height is going to be on people's minds. It's probably going to be the biggest single issue in the OCP's review. We don't want any more of those huge buildings. I'm not saying this. That's what people are going to say. So, a question like, when we think about how densifying housing, what are your concerns? Height should be on that list, because that's what people are going to go to right away. They're not going to go to put a duplex in my neighborhood. They're not going to mind that. It's already happening very nicely, too, a lot of places. But this question of height and monolithic buildings, building scale and building height, these are huge things worrying the public, I think.
So if you flip to the next page of the agenda, there was one question that should be jotted down here. Says, are there any common pitfalls or mistakes in other communities that you think town should avoid?
Yeah, that's a nice question.
Maybe there should be like a list of options. So everyone says building height.
Huge buildings, building heights, impersonality, I don't know what words to use.
Maybe we should have that more multiple choice than sometimes and people could say other. Right. Yeah, because
and another question that's sort of along that line might be, what has Qualicum Beach done well to address the housing problem? because when I think of that Kiwanis Village and how it was decaying, and I don't know what the mechanism was to rebuild that, but it got rebuilt, and it's really nice, and people love it. And why can't we do five of them?
Mm-hmm.
We've got land. Why can't we do five of those and house 200 people?
Do we have the land?
We've got land all over, across the street here, we've got land.
And make them two stories.
Make them two stories. We've got land along the railway and east. We've got land up here. We've got land on the corner of Beach and back in the first that the guys won't develop. We've got land everywhere. There's lots of land. We don't have enough ideas.
How much public is that? How much public land?
Well, some of it's public, and the town has a lot of public land. But it does. See, you're mixing the apples and the oranges, because you're saying how much of that is public land. Like the town is going to provide the money for the land. Forget that. We'll solve that later.
The other thing that is that the town could bring it into development.
Well, I'm just thinking we've got resources to work with. Mm-hmm. We don't seem to have the idea of how it works. But it's kind of sad because we've got really good examples of what does work that we've done in the last 5 or 10 years.
Okay, so let's, I just made a note of that. So what time type of housing does the town do work?
Yeah, well, I think it's a really good question.
Yeah, absolutely. So get a note of that.
Can I just say, all of those things that you've listed here are kind of the problems and what people would be concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if we have anything along here that talks about the options of forms of housing.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to be six and seven story buildings.
No.
And that's the idea of looking at infill housing, at garden suites, at co-op, and that kind of thing. So I think it's important to let people know that it doesn't have to always be a certain kind building or a certain solution to increasing housing.
Okay, so like getting into housing types.
Right. And although does it, my understanding from the provincial requirements that's coming out, it's not just going to be limited to the village neighborhood.
No.
So then options are also are if you're in a more, I guess, suburban isn't quite the idea, but if you're in Eagle Crest or Chartwell, or West Qualicum, then how receptive are you going to be to these requirements? And do you have concerns about that? And what are your concerns?
Depending on how the format may change, whether it's in the south town or out in the industry. For very long, the town is basically, in rough terms, said multifamily goes here, the uptown, everything else can come.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simplistic terms, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is they may say, that's not an option anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So then, if that's the case, what types of housing typologies do we want to see out there? So that's a very good question. So maybe we can...
Just as an aside, do you have any sense of the province? Would the province listen to what the town is requiring in terms of zoning and building heights and finishes and design guidelines, or is that all up for grabs?
That's the big mystery.
Yeah.
Right.
They probably would appreciate really good ideas for the municipality.
Yeah.
This is how we want to take advantage of this opportunity.
Well, it doesn't, from what we've seen from, say, Oak Bay, they said, Oak Bay, you have to turn out this many housing units. But they didn't say, and they all have to be, separate story buildings. They just said, you got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Make it happen. Right? So this information, like you talked about housing typologies, that would give us the information to say, we think we know how our residents want to make it happen. Right.
Like every time I drive by the Georgian site on Memorial, I think, I can, because of the topography of the land there and the location, I think, what an amazing site for a residential village.
Mm-hmm.
One story, two story, three some townhouses. It could be just the most wonderful place. But has anyone gone to those guys and said, we got an idea for that site. You want to work with us? Do it. It could be a model community.
And
we've got land.
I've said it this many times.
Yeah.
Exactly what
okay,
you said.
This particular question, one concern I have is we're not defining what higher density.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of pushing it all from a negative.
Mm-hmm.
That any higher density is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about what Petronella was just saying, there's various levels of density. So I'm not sure that this is a bit loaded, I would say, in the way that it's worded from my perspective.
Okay.
When I looked at how we would approach housing, I logically to me, I thought we could start off by talking about how we manage population growth.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, we moved into looking at the types of housing we need what role does the town play, and what is its jurisdiction? And also look at, you know, the affordability issue, and then get into rental housing, long-term versus short. And within each one of those areas, you can address things like the various types of housing. You can look at some of the changes that you're seeing now being recommended by the federal government, for example, if you want to take advantage of their housing accelerator funds. Things like, you know, changing or eliminating zoning restrictions, eliminating parking requirements, setbacks, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I think you need like a series of questions that helps us get at a number of these concerns and gives us some flexibility to get at some of these issues without sort of giving them the answer and making certain assumptions, perhaps, or maybe it's few that we're making assumptions about what's good and what's bad.
Yeah.
I'd like to stay away from that.
Yeah, the first one is all about what's bad. When you go to a public hearing, you know, and people are speaking against something, just take one of these boxes.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't mean to overgeneralize, but like it's almost always one of these things.
Yeah.
And then
what does higher density mean though?
Yeah, no, exactly.
We're not talking a high rise necessarily. We need to be talking a difference. You know, there's big differences in that.
So when I first got into planning in my neighborhood in Calgary, an inner city neighborhood that was being overtaken by three-story walk-ups, what we did is we got the city to agree that design guidelines were critical to new development. So if you wanted to put up an apartment building higher density, but it was next to a two-story house, the building part that was next to the two-story house had to match the house, and if they went away from it, they could go up. So there's sensitivity to the current development that's really important.
Of context, yeah.
Yeah. And that just took away the fear.
Mm-hmm. So maybe as a note here, like one of the concerns, if we ask a question like this, it could be fitting in with existing buildings.
Yes.
Right? Okay.
And, you know, the population is changing too. And the old people are going to be gone pretty soon. And we're not being replaced. The same population demand for housing is not going to be there.
What about a question of, like, what type of housing do you see yourself living in 5 years?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
Yeah,
Just your mind just made me think.
You know, 5 years.
Some people might point there, but not everyone.
No. And I'd like to be independent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to keep it the same. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. 850 square foot house, and I'd be really happy. As a single person.
Thank you.
Well, this is fascinating to me because I'm trying to deal with a student body at the Okanagan Community College. We're trying to figure out what do they expect out of life. And we're finding out they don't expect what we expect.
Yeah.
They're not interested. And you know, Goodwill Enterprises in the United States won't accept any more donations of household goods because they can't sell them. And if you go and talk to the guy who's got the wonderful antique shop out in the woods out here, he's loaded with stuff that we can't sell any of it. And it's all the Royal Doulton's figures and the crystal in China. And the kids don't want them. They want a snowboard in the Mount Washington Pass. And they just want a nice place to sleep and a place to eat. You know, look after some stuff. So in terms of housing, I think their needs are way less than the previous century.
Minimal.
And I think we need to understand what these people are looking for in their lives, because I don't think they're looking for oceanside.
But it's already different now.
The high density means something.
So then these kind of micro suite ideas or, you know, where it's...
Yeah, so like with the question that came up earlier, what type should we be building? Smaller detached dwellings or, smaller suites and multi-family buildings, like...
Or townhouses that automatically have a part that could be rented to someone else.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, give people the options to live more simply, you know? That's what I think.
Okay. Any more ideas? Let's hear that. Jen?
That movie that somebody said to look at about the manufactured homes, that was great.
Yeah.
I liked it. But I wanted to say that, but I also wanted to just put out there what I've been reading today is the idea of putting incentives out for people to build the kind of homes that would be better for our community. We just put in a garden suite, and we didn't get any advice, or there wasn't anything in the town. We're happy with what we got. But maybe for some of this new generation, having already pre-approved design that you could go on a website and pull off, and you would know if you got that, you didn't need an architect, and you wouldn't need to wait for all the approvals to happen. It would be done and dusted. That might be the encouraging thing for a family that's just sort of playing with the idea of where would we put mother to move faster. And it's an incentive.
So is that about identifying what barriers there are to people doing this for themselves, right? You know,
what would incentivize them to move in the direction when they're on a fence?
Okay. That's a good question. Can you give that case? Question to explore, you know, ways to encourage installer investigation.
That is an issue for people who are current owners because it is a significant cost.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're encouraging them, I think, is a good idea because otherwise you'd simply be looking for the house to turn over and for a new owner to now build that secondary suite or that garden suite in there.
Yeah. And it is very confusing. It's intimidating, like, you know, Janet, you went through it.
Well, we were really happy with our experience, but it took a long, long time to get approval. And there were minuscule things that turned out to be major design necessities to redo. And it would have been a whole lot easier if there had been a lot more information about that at the upstream.
Well, there are municipalities that have pre-approved things for infill, right? So you want a 500 square foot suite. You know, come in, you get a permit, right? Or in, you know, city of Kelowna, for example, they have options that it's in a single family neighborhood, but if you take it down, here's a 4-unit design, you don't need a development permit, you just come and get a building permit, right? So they pre-approve, and they went through a community process to identify what things are pre-approved. They didn't just make it up in a closet. So, but that is, you know, something we could explore. So that's interesting.
I just wanted to say, again, going back to the provincial requirements, if people are able to build on a single-family lot, you can build up to 4, I think it's either 4 or 6, and I think it's 4 in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
But my concern is who's going to be building those. To my mind, it's not going to be the property owner, so it will have to be a developer, whatever size or shape that is building it. So it's kind of not real. To my mind, it's not necessarily making housing more available. It might be providing more housing, but it's not necessarily making it more affordable because, again, it's going through the developer and it's profit-driven and then... So that's just an aside. I should have said that separately.
So the question, when's our question?
No, it was more a comment, but I think that the idea that building more and more and more is going to solve the housing problem isn't necessary, or the housing affordability problem isn't necessarily the solution, that you have to really weigh a lot of different things. So that's all. It's not really a question.
Andrew.
I just refer everybody to the amazing article in The Guardian from England on the weekend on what's happened to housing in Britain in the last 50 years. It's devastating. People live comfortably and securely in council houses, And now they're all, they've all got money and they're all insecure and their kids can't live anywhere. The whole concept of a secure society in Britain has collapsed. And I lived in a council house for 4 years when I was a kid, so I know what they're talking about, but it goes through all the systematic disempowerment of this social model for providing people with residential security, and it's gone. And this goes back to how do we solve the financial side of it?
Yeah.
It's a political problem that's way beyond the municipality. And we could give away town land, but no one has let us do that. We'd be in big trouble. But I mean, that's what governments did. They said, we're going to build this stuff here so people can live in an economical and secure fashion. And Margaret Thatcher did all of it.
Yeah.
And this is what we've got. And yes, the developers will move into my neighborhood, buy the 14,800 square foot plots, and those houses won't be any cheaper. That's the concern, you know. The only way to make it all stop is keep raising the interest rates. So no one could make this kind of money. That's the only way to make it stop, because that's what history's taught us.
I think we've got a lot of good things. So once again, I just want to always go back to the fact that what we're trying to do is give council information that's going to be useful.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have tough decisions to make, right? They're going to need a lot of information and background. There's no way we can provide our residents when we do this survey, right? So in other words, some of the top really complicated questions we can't ask, because otherwise there's no way that we can provide the background and a little preamble to make informed decisions. So, but there are things that I think we can get from them, you know, like understanding what the impact of maybe housing affordability has had on them. That's probably good to know.
It's going to be
building height and
so it's like a vacuum here. We're going to talk about housing, but the thing that's on everybody's mind is the affordability issue. So maybe, again, it's a little political. Should the government provide funds for affordable housing?
So the town's role in providing affordable housing?
I don't think the municipalities can do that much.
Well, we can provide land, so.
Right.
So, you remember earlier we were talking about healthcare? And we said, well, maybe we want to ask a question about what people see as the town's role in healthcare. Maybe we need a question like that. We can provide housing because the town can make land available, like we've done with Kiwanis or Kiwanis or other land in the town. We can, subsidize it. In theory, we could provide loans, something want to. We could reduce building permit fees. We could pre-approve designs. There are things we could do. Is that something we should explore?
I think the community is going to expect the town to do everything it can to address the issue, whatever mechanism you can do, without being seen as the rescuer for the whole situation, because you're not. But I mean, I don't know how the Kiwanis village was rebuilt. I don't know what the mechanism was, but something worked.
Yeah.
And we're forever grateful that it worked, And why can't we do it again? Why can't we do it on our own land, or talk to the guys on the Georgian side and do it there? Why can't we do five of them? Why can't the OCP eventually say, we're going to do five Kiwanis villages to help people out? Boy, that would win a lot of brownie points.
So I was involved in Parks Canada, two housing developments, one in Jasper and one in Lake Louise, and they were called equity co-ops. Government provided the land that people had so much equity in it, which they could take with them when they left.
Okay.
But so it was also subsidized.
Okay.
And I'm sure about the subsidizing of it, but they had to have an equity stake. So that's one idea.
Like co-op housing?
It's co-op. The idea of co-op or strat is really good because you control the social and environment, social and physical environment, so that everything got managed.
Sure.
So those are not just an example of what could be done, but how you get there with the questionnaire, I don't know, but you need to have something in there, in my view, that sparks, and yeah, that's a good idea.
I think a lot of people do know what housing co-ops are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another place. So that, okay, something to explore. I mean, it's something to talk about for sure. So in the list of like, what kinds of things would you like to see?
I think this density issue, I mean, we've got really good examples of the quantities of medium scale density, which doesn't offend anyone. People really like it, they respect it, you know. So it's not that we can't do it, we've already done it. So we can densify, this is densified. No, this is good for a certain group of people.
Yeah.
So we've got good examples to work with.
Another good example is I live close to one of the nicest mobile homes I've ever seen. And I understand from our conversation we had last meeting, I think you mentioned that there was some town land over at the airport. What about a mobile park out there along the same stands as the one on our views?
What about noise?
What's that?
What about noise at the airport? People complain.
They will. So there's going to be no telephones allowed in this mobile.
I'm talking to aircraft noise. But there's no complaining if you live by an airport.
But that reflects
on you
choose. That reflects the concept of opening up these zones and allowing uses on land that maybe traditional movements allow for them. Not necessarily the airport, but talking generally about the zoning districts and opening those up. Because that is where the governments are going. The higher level of local governments are going. And thinking about our zoning in a different way. To allow some of these, you know, different types of density to occur.
We've got good examples of this happening already in the lab.
Yeah.
I mean, on Chester, the people who dug their house up and moved it over 80 feet, you know, and now they've got 2.5 acres up back where there's room for like 10 houses. You know, they build a little village in there. It's great. And I live just near there. You know, I don't think they've applied to do that, but that's what they're going
to
do.
They're going to have to take it down.
Sooner or later.
Well, maybe they're waiting for the province.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we've gotten a lot of good ideas out on the table with the guide housing, so. Yeah, let's go on to other concepts for new questions. Like if you've had any inspirations between last week and this week that we haven't already hit on.
Sorry, did we already cover this green spaces versus new housing and?
Oh, okay. We'll just walk through the rest of the housing questions. I was just writing down all the ideas that you had. Like I said, we did make some notes on potential questions, so we'll walk through. So,
speaking to that one of mine, I just listened to everything we just said. This question doesn't make any sense to me at all now.
Okay.
Because you're going to ask, we talked about all the housing issues, so should we be preserving green space and parks? That's contradictory to, well, most people would just say yes, and that's going to shut down development, and that is where you're coming from.
Right.
And then if you say developing new housing, then we're back to what type of housing are we talking about?
So it's not really useful.
So I don't think that's a useful question at all.
Alright.
I agree.
Think about that.
Great.
Next one. If new housing developments were approved, what additional public services do you think should be included or enhanced? So once again, you're at a public hearing, somebody's concerned about the impact on the neighborhood. They either raised the ones in the first question or this one, like, we already don't have enough
But wouldn't this happen naturally? It's kind of a red herring question.
Well, it's about perception, right? It's understanding what people's concerns are, because they often raise things like concerns over, well, we can't find a doctor already. How do you even think about that in the physician housing, right?
I think it's just a question potentially about managing population growth or the whole issue of population growth. Because it's not just housing,
it's
services as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're thinking about how the municipality provides
required services, then you're looking at the trade-off between increasing taxes. We're in an environment where governments are saying you should be reducing your fees, so that's one revenue source that you're potentially not going to have in the future, or it's going to be less. So it's that trade of you know, how you provide all these things and keep your taxes at a level that are reasonable, but recognizing that growth gives you a bigger tax base.
Right. So that's a really good point, because these are in the housing kind of framework, but really it's a services question. You know, it's probably about understanding what services other people really want to keep.
Are we asking in this questionnaire how many people want to have living in Guelph and Beach? Is there a population target?
Not really. Well, no. But like, how would you answer that question?
Well, how about saying you want to see Guelph and Beach keep growing larger and larger?
Well, the OCP already says, I think it's like 12,000.
Yes. Well, that's what I asked.
Yeah, so that number came about by kind of calculating based on our current plan, like what it would reasonably result. Like, so if that's the plan, if we keep with that plan, how many people are likely to be here?
So if you put if you preface this or put in this questionnaire, the current plan anticipates there will be 12,000 people in Guelph Beach, an addition of 3,500 people. Do you agree with this? I think you'd have a revolution right now. So I think we're sitting on information which is pivotal to how people think about the future, but we're not telling them what it is.
So help me understand how that would go on a question today. I hear you. What do we want to know?
How about what are the dangers involved with Qualcomm growing any bigger?
So
it's not dangers, I don't think it's the right.
What are your concerns?
So
I don't like change will be the answer.
Yeah.
So I usually don't like to ask a negative question without a positive question. If we're going to do that, what are your concerns? What do you see as benefits?
Okay, well, how would you frame what I've said as a positive question?
Like, well, you could ask the same question, what do you see as the benefits of, you know, the town growing? And you know, some things like increased services, people that change their payouts, where, you know, like, we could have a list of things there. So, maybe
I just find it interesting that we've had three of these meetings. But as a group, we haven't talked about the size of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually 25% bigger than what it is now. What are we going to do?
but I think to answer that, if you're comfortable, are you comfortable with the population growing to the target of 12,000? I think people would have to know what is the impact on the services and the structures that are in place if we reach that goal. Like, how does that translate with... To make a proper decision, you have to understand that.
And you wouldn't... 3,000 people wouldn't just arrive without services, right?
No.
So it is a challenging question to answer out of context. It's not like, you know, Parksville water supply ran out and 3,000 residents just suddenly move over. You know, this would happen over the next 50 years, and it's likely to be more medical facilities, more parks, investment, you know, like all those things. So that's the challenge of that question, not just about the number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it's fundamental to land use, too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they're all connected and looking at, you know, we will have growth. We can quibble about what it might be year to year, but there will be growth. We have a land base, and at the current time, we have stipulated that certain things can be built in certain areas, and we have so much land that can be used for certain purposes. So if you're going to have a growing population, and then going to new housing, then, you know, where do those additional homes go? And how do you manage that growth? And I think, you know, that's got to sort of start from that point. And people need to understand what the town looks like, what our boundaries are, you know, where we have contemplated in the current OCP that things will go, because it's going to have to change.
Oh, I was just wondering, perhaps one of the questions could be, or in line with the questions, should the town explore the idea of nodal growth into neighboring communities like
Bowser, Deep Bay,
mm-hmm.
Fanny Bay.
Or like the town doesn't
know. No, but in terms of relations with the RDNs, like, is there a way that we can put that idea forward?
It's already in the plan. It's already in the regional growth strategy. It's like Deep Bay is a node. Bowser is a node. Like, then there are nodes. There's a challenge, and this is sorry for the detour, but it's financially so challenging to start building new properties, right? You know, that the sewer system costs a huge amount of money. There's no, you know, there's limited funding to do that. There's a lot of land use restrictions and environmental restrictions that weren't in place when people developed the town. You know, they just planned it all and, you know, ran the pipes where they wanted. So they can't do that now. So there's economic challenges and environmental challenges and then social challenges because people are there and we can't just kick them off like the colonists did 100 years ago.
Well,
it's not easy.
But how do we encourage that, or can we encourage that? It's just, I think we need to look at, you know, again, the reason, why are we growing? Do we need to grow? Why are we growing? And in what areas? Is it all residential growth? Because we talk about an expanding tax base, but the residential aspect of taxes is not nearly as large as the proportionately to businesses and commercial space. So maybe we should be looking at that for growth. So it's
okay.
Some fairly fundamental questions.
So I'm thinking, well, who's coming here and why are they coming? I mean, I know why I came here. And so what if a person like me couldn't find a place? So what? You know, I came from one place to be here, but I could have stayed there.
And that was what I was going to say. Is, are we only growing because people want to come here? But we're a destination, people want to be here.
Not having many babies,
I'll
tell you that.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is I think the main growth is people moving from bigger centers or the mainland and wanting to come here.
Yeah.
Isn't
that? Oh. You need to accommodate that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we turn that around? We're speaking sort of along what Greg was getting at earlier. In not too many more years, many of us will not be in Qualicum Beach anymore because we'll be the other side of the grand. And then someone can replace us that can afford to live in the houses that we have presently, never mind whoever we're building for down the road. I mean, I don't know where you find that answer, but
yeah.
If there's no market, the price goes down.
Yes.
So
then the dynamic changes.
But are we really going to go into a new iteration of the official community plan without saying something about the population?
We need to.
I mean, do we still think we're going to get to 12,000? I don't know that we do after hearing this conversation. I don't know.
When we're all gone, the infill will take over what we have and we won't need to build out, right?
But as the baby boomers want to move, there's a lot of baby
boomers. Janet, and then I just want to maybe wrap up this discussion. Go ahead.
You're probably here at the time, but when the town was thinking about should go with letting Chartwell in or not, it seemed to me, as I recall, there was a how much water do we have, and therefore how much can we grow? And nobody had a problem thinking in those terms at that time. We felt a whole lot safer analyzing Chartwell in the context of can we afford it water-wise.
Well,
and I think the number
was 10,000. Yeah, so water is not the issue. And I think that's why that can't be the basis of our decision making. Otherwise, based on our current water supply, we would turn into a very dense urban area because we have a lot more water than all the areas around. And if density was allocated solely on water sources, you know, Parksville would be I don't think that's what our residents necessarily want to be when they grow up. So I know we wanted to circle back to timeline, and we've put it aside at the beginning of this meeting. So I have a lot of great ideas on how we can discuss, and we'll work on that and do what we can do. So we are on the timeline. So we, October 27th, which is Friday, we circulated all the survey questions. So by November 3rd, we can get responses from all those channels. Members of the council also were invited to do the survey. It's not council as a decision-making body, but individual members of the list. Some of the writing on the wall. Next Monday, or sorry, today is October 30th, so mark that one on the list. That's done. November 6th is our next council, our next committee meeting. We're hoping, so with next Monday, I'm really hoping to, by the next Monday, to have an endorsement of a draft survey.
Is that November 11th?
Yeah, I won't be able to attend that meeting. I wouldn't say that I couldn't attend.
So between now and next week, we're going to try to, you know, really put our heads down and kind of put together a clear direction to send to the consultants. So next week, we can say, here's what we heard from you. Here's all the things that we'd like to explore. And then after the meeting, you send that to the consultant and say, put it in a question. And then the next time when we come back, we actually have questions to look at. And there is a chance that you'll be like, man, that consultant nailed it.
How long will the consultant have to synthesize all
week?
Just a week.
And they said that that's not unrealistic. We've given them a heads up.
So do you have a meeting date for when we would have look at their results?
Yeah, that's November 13th.
But to Andrew's point about November 13th, that's a Monday, right?
Right.
And
that'll be the Monday.
Is Saturday, so that does that not make Monday a test?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a test?
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
For what?
Everything's ruined.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, that's even golden found. Well, we could.
Looks like we're working that day later.
No. You won't come with me on the Tuesday.
Celebrate it on Saturday.
Yeah,
maybe I was going to say the 14th.
I think we're going to need a special meeting that week.
Yeah. The only day I could meet would be the 14th. I have to go to the left.
The afternoon of the 14th, I could. Yeah.
And I could.
Mm-hmm.
Well, given that I have you all here, let's see if we can.
Tuesday, November 14th, at the same time? For certain?
I think it's awesome for me.
Tuesday, the 14th is good for me. In the afternoon?
Yep.
Everyone good?
Thank you.
Okay.
2:30?
Can we just go back to November 6th?
Yes. So we're all good for the 14th then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm taking a clear direction at that point to give to the consultants. There are a number of issues we haven't even discussed yet.
Okay.
Like short-term rentals, like home rentals.
Okay.
Just, I think, very casual.
Okay.
But, so I'm not sure that is a realistic date. Mm-hmm. We can try for that, but I still think we have discussions to occur.
Okay. Well, we'll do our best. So let's see what we can get and if the survey more work, then my committee would have to disrecommend the council any more time. And then, but it's always an option. Yeah.
I'm just wondering then, Susan, are you seeing the short-term rentals as ongoing business? So under ongoing business right now, we have questions regarding aspects of Pelican Beach to be preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And also, do we want to look at short-term rentals?
We had a question in the last survey on short-term rentals.
Yeah.
And given the provincial legislation, I think it's an issue we have to address.
Right.
Because we also should be talking about long-term in the context of
housing,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was under misapprehension at our meeting last week about short-term rentals because I thought that because we were a community less than 10,000 people,
mm-hmm.
that we were not part of the new legislation in the sense that we could choose to opt in But that's not the case when I look at it.
We're on the list.
But we're on the list because we're adjacent to a larger community. So that means that come May 1st, 2024, the provincial provisions on short-term rental will apply.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I think that is significant. The community.
Yeah.
I think we need to explore.
So that's eliminating the needs that are not residents.
Well, we've never permitted short-term rentals in residential areas, so this will now permit them, potentially, in people's principal homes and their secondary suites and garden suites.
Well, it will only permit them if the town permits them. So,
Yeah.
So then, when this one in particular, you have overlapping regulations, so the town permits one thing. The province permits one thing. The things that both of them permit are what's allowed.
Right. As long as yours is more restrictive, that's part of it.
That's right. So right now the town is more restrictive. So we have the option of losing. And so that's something we're going to need to look at. So.
And currently there's no such rainfall in neighborhoods?
Not allowed, but there's a lot of them.
Not allowed because water
permitted
use.
Correct.
In the residential
zone.
Okay.
Yeah, so we definitely have, so there's about 120 short-term rentals in the town. We know that.
120?
Some of them are illegal. Some of them are absolutely fine, and they'll be able to continue on because they're in, say, commercial areas on the waterfront or, so, but a lot of them are not, you might know.
Mm-hmm.
So we have asked, we did a question before, where was the survey? What, am I surveying? Oh, okay.
So when we
did the quick walkthrough of the survey, we said we wanted to ask this question again. And so that is, not permitted currently. How do you feel about short-term rentals in residential areas? Yes, permit them, subject to requirements that address issues such as nuisance and taxation. Don't allow short-term rentals in residential areas or other. So.
That's a question that's already in the.
That's right. But Susan, if that kind of addresses your concerns, we can just keep it. Because it is still potentially relevant.
Well, I think there's more to it in the sense that if you're saying that when the legislation comes in, it still won't be permitted in residential zones and qualified. I think that I hope that's the way the legislation, I hope that's the way it comes
out. It is.
Okay. So then the question would be whether we opt in to the provincial code.
Yeah.
Whether we have bylaws and other guidelines that deal with some of the issues that arise with short-term rentals. So I think there's a bit more to it, but I think we can push.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about short-term rentals, we're talking about tourism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there's a different definition, too. We've used, or recently, we were saying 30 days, less than 30 days, probably the same 90.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's a different...
Yeah, it's an interesting...
I think the reason why they did that is to accommodate people. I didn't think it was for workers. I think it's allowing people that are traveling for extended periods, snowbirds, for example, where they go out of country or are gone for three to 6 months. I think the province is saying you can still do that. So it's more a question of whether you agree with that principle or not. But it is 90 days.
Yeah.
I thought the 90 days refers to the fact that it no longer was it considered short-term rental if you rented sort of, a few days here and there. Mm-hmm. But it now expands what a short-term rental is, and it restricts you even further to just being able to do that out of your principal home,
mm-hmm.
if it's 90 days. So people could have rented for 2 months before,
mm-hmm.
and it wouldn't be considered a short-term rental necessarily. term, it would have been considered a 10 day. And now, by extending it to 90 days, it doesn't allow that to happen. So it makes it more restrictive.
The biggest impact will be that, at least for what I can tell, you cannot rent a house other than your principal dwelling or a suite on your property. So if you've been an investor in the Airbnb world, you are what she said. And so that's a huge impact. And I don't know how many investor owned Airbnbs there are at the time. I just don't know that answer. Certainly the fact that Airbnbs are operating in residential areas is having an impact on our housing supply. Like, that is definitely the case. How many? Maybe 15. So if the town doesn't do anything, like if we just say, we're good, it's still not allowed, then what will happen is the short-term rental platforms will no longer be able to list any of the short-term vacation rentals in the town. Because the ones that are legal will get business licenses and everyone else will be refused. And without a business license, you will not be able to list on VRBO and all those other ones. So, maybe big changes.
But you're talking then they're only permitted in commercial homes.
That's correct. Or in residential zone has commercial as an
option.
That's correct. Yeah, but that would be a big change. So the town doesn't need to think about whether we're okay with, great, when you're going away for a couple months, it's your principal dwelling. Are we okay with that being rented short-term? That's the question that we need our council to answer at some point. So maybe you think we need to be more specific in this question. Because right now it says we should explore it. We should permit it subject to requirements. Don't allow it. Or other. Right?
Well, here's it. Around that, Airbnb, or short-term rental, is part of the economy of this town. So by restricting it, we're impacting the town's economy. I have no idea how to gauge that, but there must be somebody doing it. As a pushback.
Yeah, no, it's a very good question.
It also raises the whole issue of tourist accommodation. Which we haven't really gotten at this survey. And so it's the interplay between, or it's the trade-off really, housing versus tourist accommodation, where tourist accommodation should best be in the town. I know there was some issue about our village guidelines, that it wasn't necessarily broad enough to sort of cover all the different types of tourist accommodation that perhaps you might want in the village neighborhood. Because I think it just refers to a boutique hotel or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that potentially needs to be expanded. But, it is that issue. We're a tourist town in some respects, but we also need to provide housing.
Well, the problem is it's definitely made the choice of prioritizing housing over tourist accommodation. There's no debate. They just did it. It's done. But after a brief discussion on this, I think this, like we said, we want to keep the short-term vacation rental question. I think it needs a little bit more work so we get more useful information. And once again, I want to work on this. But if anyone has any inspiration, let us know. By next week, we'll probably have a bit more clarity on that.
Maybe the consultants will have
to. Yeah, maybe. They might have some examples in other places. Okay. All right, last topic to cover. We wanted to talk about questions regarding the aspects of Quahog Beach Reserve. And this was about character, I think, really like quality of life and character, not so much like environmental preservation specific, right?
Well, it could be all of it.
Yeah.
It could be all of those things. I have several sometimes when we recently discussed something and we talk about the character. I can see what we have meant when we're storing a little bit of design guidelines and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure that that's meaningful. So, you know, character of certain parts of the downtown versus character overall.
Yeah.
So I do think it incorporates a lot of different things. Because our areas are so different. And so it could be more environmentally focused or green space focused or whatever.
When I think of Colton Beach, I think of the town center.
Yeah, I think that how would I answer that question? The first thing I'd say would be an accessible town center, something you can get to and get out of, get into and out of and pick stuff up. I think that's what people want.
Whereas I would say the waterfront.
Well, I'd say the waterfront as well.
It's just the jewel.
Yeah. Both of those.
Probably combo of both.
Yeah, it's both.
Really is what we're...
Yeah.
Okay, so this question was, like, what do you want to preserve? And then there'd be a list of things that people like. Walkable to town center, free parking, beautiful waterfront, forest.
Well, it's a mobility issue, though. Things are close to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not just what you want to preserve. It's getting around is easy.
And I look at it as land use again. You know, what choices are we making about what we do with the land that we have?
Right, the farmland. After you mentioned that, I think it's
previous. Farmland and the golf course take them away and you don't have any place.
Yeah.
and accessibility to all our green spaces. That's so close to the center. I know, like I had a friend that moved temporarily to Parksville and couldn't handle it, had to come back to Pelican because, you know, the accessibility we have to nature,
But it's is that your friend
you're
talking
about? That's my eyebrow down at the end of the table.
See if you're still awake. He
went to Barcelona. Oh, okay, okay. No, it's not him, no. But...
My name is a gag order.
We'll talk later. Okay, so, you know, watercraft, easy to get around, farmland, golf courses, forest. So this type of list, is that what we're thinking would be kind of nice to...
Well, it's actually a low traffic density compared to Barcelona. Yeah. It really is.
I mean, some of it dovetails or is covered in some of the existing questions to some extent.
Yeah.
Right? So the section or 29 and 30, balancing the priorities of the village neighborhood, the future of Falcon Beach, it all kind of.
I don't think an overlap is necessarily a problem. It's just a different way of coming at the same value systems.
So when I look at 29, it talks about a balance of priorities, and it talks about goals, right? These are goals. This is, to me, that's future-looking, right? And I think we talked about it at the first meeting. This whole process is really about figuring out what things we want to hold dear to and what things we want to embrace in terms of change, right? Because we hold on to some things from the past, and we move forward to some things in the future. So... the question we're talking about now is really the what do we need to hold on to, make sure we don't lose in this course.
Well, it goes right back to what I said earlier about do we really want 15 or 20,000 people living here? Because I think most people, one of the first things they say about living here is low popular.
Well, that is in our control, but it's also not.
No.
Because if our demographics shifted, it's houses changed over and the way that people live in their houses change, and we have the same number of people per household as you would find in Surrey or in our population was about 30%, like that.
You're talking about what people like about living here. They don't want to have a crushing population.
No, I know. I guess what I'm saying is I want to make sure we're not asking questions that are totally outside of our control, right? Because we control mostly land use development.
But what is the question?
I don't know.
I thought we were asking what do people like about living here? What are the values? Well, I think they value a low population.
I think what we value is this community, this sense of community that we can get. And maybe that equates like a low population.
Small town.
But then maybe the question is how can we keep that if the population grows? the sense of a community feel. Like,
I like that. That
okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at with. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say quality means a lot. A lot of things to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that a short narrative, a couple of sentences from people would be helpful
mm-hmm.
in flushing that out rather than the sort of multiple choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So maybe that could be the last question. What does quality mean to you? Like, maybe that's how you end the survey and you get, like...
Yeah, I mean, just listening to everybody.
Yeah.
The passion of what we don't want to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What means the most to you?
Already out of time, but yeah. What is the capacity, population capacity of the water and sewer?
A lot.
So we don't want to know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
But this is probably...
Things can change. Like the states, so the future may have 100% climate impact on our water system, so you know, keep that in mind, but our water capacity significantly exceeds our OCP capacity. So that's why I try not to focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about what we want to build, or what we want to have.
Not a limited chapter.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a nice to hear.
Yeah, it is, and we still need to take water very seriously, because otherwise,
that will stay.
My personal concern is that the province can say, you have enough water, share it.
Right.
And that's totally within their control. So,
yeah.
So let's manage our water effectively as possible. We've covered tons of ground, and so it's been super, super helpful. I think we have a lot of work to do. And hopefully Kate and Liz come back to work tomorrow after hearing.
So next Monday we'll be looking at what you've come up with.
Yeah, that's great. And so we're going to try to clarify with the questions won't necessarily be drafted, right? Some of the questions might, but where there's no question, it'll be very clear. And so we want a question that does this, right? Because we can answer that for them. But some of the questions we'll ask up was.
Do you feel as the planner that the discussions we're hearing around this table are improving on the previous questionnaire?
Yes.
You do?
Definitely.
So you're happy with the way it's going?
Good. I think what's going to make this survey better, if we can make it better, is focusing on things that are helpful.
Yes.
If we just want to know because we want to know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot, I do feel like, and I'm probably just as guilty as the previous day, right? There's one thing that this question is good as cool enough. That's not as useful, you know. So that's the framework I'm trying to approach this whole survey with. And if it helps council, great, let's ask it. If it doesn't, save it for someone else.
So you feel that we're heading in the
right direction?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
And
so, thank you so much. Motion to adjourn.
This
I don't even know if I'm supposed to vote.